Tom Ackerman.
Welcome to Cardinals Nation Inside Ballpark Village. That is where we are going to be for the next 2+ hours. Not only sports on a Sunday morning, but Joe Pott is going to have our pregame. He may be inside Busch Stadium for that one today. It is a busy day over there. We're 2 days from the trade deadline. The Cardinals are taking on the Nationals this afternoon at 1:15. The Cardinals got trounced last night, 14-3, so they're going to have to shake that off and try to figure out how to get themselves off the canvas and back on board. That was not good yesterday. It basically, in summary, we could sit here and harp on it all day, and we'll talk to Ollie Marmol. He's going to be on with us here in just a little bit. 10:15 is his scheduled time, although we're flexible, and we can catch him a little later if things are getting a little busy over there, which they tend to get this time of year. We will talk to Ollie, and you know, I don't know that we need to spend 15 minutes on what happened yesterday. I mean, they got beat in the sixth inning. They got ripped in the sixth inning. They gave up 7 runs in the sixth inning. This is a bigger picture thing as to why the Cardinals have lost 9 of 14, I think, is a fair question, and where they are right now. And then you look forward to the trade deadline on Tuesday, see if they can strike, make a move or two, and then attack the rest of their schedule. John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations, always kind enough to join us every week, is going to join us today. He will be with us live at 11:30. So make sure that you set, if you're out and about today, make sure you're back in your car at 11:30, because John Mozeliak is going to talk about the trade deadline. Now, obviously, he's not going to tell you who he's trying to trade for, nor is he going to tell you who he is trying to trade. But he did tell us last week, and this is something that I find interesting, is that, you know, I posted a summary of what he said on KMOX in one tweet. And I said basically this, that he was on with us and said he's made calls to a number of GMs, and he's gotten the sense that these teams were sort of at a fork in the road, like a crossroads. They weren't sure if they wanted to be buyers or sellers, if they were contenders or not. But he thought that this weekend, when we're in now, would give him more clarity as to what they are trying to accomplish. That was met by, I think, mostly understanding Cardinals fans that understood where they were going, but then a lot of people responded and were like, well, he didn't say anything, as usual, or what's that? What clarity do you need? And it let you know the negative tone, which I get it. You know, I was just talking, my friend Cooper Smith is here with me, and I was telling him, I think Cardinals fans started getting angry right around the time in 2016. You know, the Cubs won the World Series, Cardinals missed the playoffs 3 years in a row and missed it by a week, but missed it. And then they went back in 19, got to the playoffs, beat the Braves, got swept by the Nationals, pandemic hit. Things have just not been the same really since 2015 when they won 100 games. And I think the slide turned some Cardinals fans off. And I a lot of people have asked about that, as to what is wrong with, why are Cardinals fans so angry? Well, you know, they're used to winning. I mean, they won the World Series in 2011. They went to the World Series in 13 and haven't been back. And you can call them spoiled all you want. There's a standard that's set, and Cardinals fans want to get back to the World Series. So since they saw their biggest rival win the World Series in 2016, I think there was a bit of a slide in the enthusiasm, while most Cardinals fans, I think, are still excited. Anyway, the angry Cardinals fans were saying, well, he didn't say anything. He didn't. You know, if you listen closely to Mozeliak, and what he said there actually was pretty revealing. One, that they were active buyers, that they were talking to multiple GMs. Two, he said it right there. They were talking to teams that were not yet throwing in the white flag. He didn't say those words, but if you just hear what he said, you can name the teams probably, right? The Rangers. They weren't understanding if they were in it or not at that point. The Rays, who have since started dealing like crazy. The Giants. I'm just guessing here. He didn't say the teams, but the Giants, a team that was sort of teetering and not sure if they were still in it or not. And there are others you could name, but there are teams out there. It's not a huge group, but there were teams that were sort of wondering if they were still in it. Not the White Sox. They're out. You know, we all know they're out. And it's been widely reported. Bob Nightingale, I believe, was the first to say that Eric Fetty was drawing interest from a lot of teams, and particularly the Cardinals. Really good starter. He's good. I don't think there's any doubt. But all of these starters come at a cost. When you have a lot of teams going after a small inventory of players, the price goes up. If more teams start to put players into that pool, the inventory gets larger. but there's still a high demand for the best of the best. And what's really happening here is, you know, a wait-and-see attitude on some of these teams that are going to say, we're dealing. You know, we're going to make, let's say that the Rangers say, you know what, Nathan Eovaldi's for sale. And maybe they don't say it publicly, but they're telling GMs, yes, we're ready. Maybe that is happening as early as today, and Eovaldi would be a great Cardinal. I don't think there's any question that paired with Sonny Gray at the top of the rotation, it would look awesome. But it comes at a cost. You know, how much stomach do you have for dealing away your top prospects? You can cross Jordan Walker off the list. I'm pretty sure they're not willing to trade Jordan Walker unless they got absolutely blown away by something. I highly, highly doubt it. I'm sure they've gotten plenty of calls, but I just don't see it. I don't see Tink Hentz getting dealt either. I know that he's still a ways away from being a factor at the big league level, but he's just too good of a prospect. But there are a lot of prospects. Cardinals have some good prospects, not the top of the MLB pipeline rankings, but good ones. And some actually that they just drafted. You forget Weatherhold, you're keeping him. But there are some others that, you know, I think there's a chance that the Cardinals would be interested in making a deal if they could package together some prospects. This is me talking, not John Mozeliak, but we're going to talk to Mo about it at 11:30. And here's the other thing about the trade deadline I wanted to bring up is, you know, be careful what you are reading out there. You know, I think just because somebody says, here's a scenario that I envision, like Jim Bowden, who's very respected, former GM, hosts a show on Sirius XM. I really like Jim. He's on MLB Network Radio. I was just listening to him this morning, actually. He makes sense. He talked, but he wrote a story, and it got a lot of legs because he writes for The Athletic, who is partnering with the New York Times. And when he says, here's a scenario, Blake Snell to the Cardinals. This is how I can make it happen and why I see it making sense. That doesn't mean that the Cardinals are going to trade for Blake Snell or that they are talking to the Giants. They could be, but it doesn't mean that. It means that somebody wrote up a scenario. But sometimes these things can catch wildfire and suddenly there are headlines being picked up, you know, Giants or Cardinals in play for Snell. Well, nobody said that. Somebody came up with a scenario. Snell, could he? Yeah, it's possible. You know, he could be dealt. I mean, the Giants, as I said, are one of those teams that are sort of teetering on the edge. He had an unbelievable game last night. He struck out 15 in 6 innings. He is on the rise. He looks like he's gotten his groove. He's got his momentum going. He feels pretty good about himself. And I'm sure the Giants feel good about him. But look, they're going to want a haul, man. He's in a 2-year, $62 million contract, so it doesn't kill you for the long term necessarily, but it's still a big chunk of money, and you're going to have to give up a big prospect. Are the Cardinals willing to do that? I don't know. Are they willing to go toe-to-toe with Brian Cashman? As John Heyman reported, the Yankees are now sniffing around the Blake Snell opportunity. So just, you know, temper your expectations and enthusiasm and understand that a sensible deal is more realistic. I'm not saying the Cardinals aren't going to go all in. It's always possible. They've made some big deals in the past. A couple years ago, they dealt for Jordan Montgomery and Jose Quintana. That was a pretty good 1-2 punch to get themselves playoff ready. We'll see what they do. But let's all, in the next 48 hours, keep our cool and keep our heads here and not get wild. But we will talk to John Mozeliak 11:30, which will be fun, and he'll give some information, hopefully. Ollie Marmol is on deck. It's 10:15. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Cardinals Nation inside Ballpark Village. Big day. Cardinals and Nationals here at Busch Stadium. I'm Tom Ackerman, Sports on a Sunday Morning, sponsored by Graybar. Welcome back. You are listening to Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX. I'm Tom Ackerman. It is a thrill to be with you. Ken Aldridge is here with his group. They were the high bidders at the Provident Behavioral Health Gala, which was in February. Provident is a wonderful organization that is located right here in St. Louis. They operate the suicide hotline, and their experience is in crisis, and their experience is in, you know, making it available for everyone. And that's the beautiful thing about Provident, which is headquartered right here in the city. Again, they operate that hotline, and they also are just a organization that has grown leaps and bounds. They do their event every year at the Chase. They raise a ton of money. I helped chip in with this auction item and MC their event. Mike Gersh, Cardinals general manager, is part of their board along with me. So a tip of the cap to Ken and to Provident for all that they have done to raise money for that organization. So they're sitting around enjoying some sports on a Sunday morning along with my pal Cooper, who's headed to the University of Tennessee to join our man Tony Vitello and baseball and sports out there. See what the Vols can do, except when they play Mizzou, of course. You're listening to Sports on a Sunday Morning. We're going to have Ollie Marmel, the Cardinals manager. He's a bit delayed at the office. We have been in communication, so when we can get a free moment with him, we will talk to Ollie. In the meantime, John Mozeliak at 11:30 on KMOX. We also have a lot of trades that have gone down. So I thought what we would do since we started talking trades. And by the way, we got a text from a listener, Seth, who said, and I anticipated this, it was either a text or a tweet that Drew Young passed along that said, hey, temper our expectations. That's funny, because our expectations are extremely low. And I totally anticipated that and get it. I get that. And you know what? That's what I'm saying, is keep your expectations not at rock bottom, because I think the Cardinals are going to make a deal, but, you know, it's okay to keep them low, too. Then you may be surprised if they do something that is of your liking. But let's be sensible here as we head into this deadline. But the Cardinals need to improve the club, and they know that. And as it stands right now, it's a good team, but it's been an inconsistent team over the last couple of weeks, and starting to rear its ugly head again is a pitching situation where they could use another arm or two. Yes, absolutely they need a right-handed bat off the bench against left-handed pitching. But I think that if they don't make a move for a right-handed bat, it's because they think that Arenado and Goldschmidt will, as Ollie told us multiple times, eventually get going and carry them down the stretch. I don't think you can anticipate Jordan Walker being one of those right-handed bats. He's not shown enough consistency at the minor league level to translate to here right now. But a right-handed bat would be great, but that comes at a cost, and I think that the Cardinals' priority right now is a starting pitcher, and I think that their priority right now is perhaps another arm for their bullpen. And again, we'll talk to John Mozeliak and see if he'll let us know what their needs are coming up at 11:30. Here are the deals that have gone down as of right now, 10:24 a.m. Central Time, more than 48 hours before Tuesday's deadline. The Padres this morning acquired Jason Adam from the Tampa Bay Rays for three prospects. Adam is a good pitcher, and he is controllable through 2026. High leverage relief, 24 saves over three seasons with Tampa Bay, 2.30 ERA, 194 strikeouts in 164 and two-thirds innings. Is that good? Yes, that's good. And the Padres have picked him up. So here we go again. The teams that the Cardinals are chasing in the wild card right now, and yes, they are now chasing the Padres, the Braves, and the Mets. Two of them have been pretty aggressive here, the Padres and the Mets, in making deals. The Mets picked up Jesse Winker from the Nationals last night. They acquired him for right-handed pitcher Tyler Stewart. Stewart's pretty good. Big, tall pitcher from the Mets organization, and now Winker goes to the Mets. He has been a Cardinals killer. And he now joins the Mets, who are trying to chase the Cardinals down in the wild card. The Phillies, the top of the NL East, they've acquired Carlos Estevez from the Angels. Estevez is their closer, and he's good. 20 saves for LA this year, 2.38 ERA, a pair of prospects. Yesterday, the Blue Jays revealed they are clearly sellers. They traded Danny Jansen, good catcher, to the Red Sox for three prospects. They also traded to the Cubs pitcher Nate Pearson. Now, you would ask, why are the Cubs buying at the deadline? The Cubs are thinking about the future. Pearson is again, controllable through 2026. They're thinking about the next couple of years, and so they grabbed Pearson. I don't see the Cubs as a factor whatsoever. They're 10 games out in the division. They're in last place right now. It would take an unbelievable run for them to even have a shot. They're sellers right now, but they grabbed Pearson for the future. That's how I see that. The Blue Jays are definitely in sell mode. The Yankees went for someone who's been in sell mode for a while, the Marlins. They traded Jazz Chisholm to the Yankees. Chisholm's an exciting player. He's fun, outfielder, also plays infield. He's been traded to the Yankees by Skip Schumacher's Miami Marlins. Other deals, the Brewers picked up Nick Mears from the Rockies. Mears is, he's got a high ERA, 5.56, but don't let that fool you. He's a swing-and-miss guy, 57 strikeouts in 45 and a third. He goes from Colorado to Milwaukee. So the NL Central leaders add another arm to their bullpen. And those were the deals yesterday, and then that one deal this morning in which the Rays picked up Jason Adam. I think it was a deal late last night that was announced this morning from the Rays for three prospects. So that's your trade deadline update. We'll continue to keep an eye on it. Trade deadline is not until the end of the day on Tuesday. So there's still plenty of time, but deals are going down here left and right. And so will the Cardinals strike today and make a deal? We'll find out. Coming into town later today will be the aforementioned Texas Rangers, the team that the Cardinals beat in the 2011 World Series. And tomorrow night, Chip Carey and Joe Buck are going to do the broadcast together. It was Joe Buck who called that 2011 World Series and his famous "We will see you tomorrow night" call. Tomorrow morning, Joe Buck's going to be on Total Information AM on KMOX. Looking forward to catching up with him at 9 o'clock. We'll take a break. You're listening to Sports on a Sunday Morning on KMOX. We'll be back with much more. We are at Cardinals Nation inside Ballpark Village. It's open. People are starting to come in and grab a table. This place was slammed last night. I mean, slammed. I was here yesterday at about 4 o'clock, and people were in here enjoying themselves, having drinks inside. Bally Sports Midwest Live was rocking. They had a live band, some hair band rocking out there. I mean, it was nuts. So come on down to Ballpark Village, settle yourselves in for what should be a fun Sunday afternoon of baseball. Cardinals got to get this one today. They've been trounced the last 2 days, gave up 24 runs in 2 days. It's time to lock it down. Miles Michaelis is the pitcher today at 1:15. A break and back with more Sports on a Sunday Morning live from Cardinals Nation right after this. Welcome back. Sports on a Sunday Morning sponsored by Gray Bar. We're coming to you today from Cardinals Nation inside Ballpark Village. We've been broadcasting from this restaurant for a decade plus. When they first put this in, they put in a beautiful KMOX chrome sign into the brick above us, and we have had this great spot for a long time. And you know what? Every once in a while, I like to do Sports on a Sunday Morning from here. So here we are live at Cardinals Nation inside Ballpark Village. It's great to see everybody. We have a beautiful view of Busch Stadium. We look in from left field across the street from the ballpark, and soon they will open up the ballpark and get ready for a 1:15 game. Come on down. If you don't have tickets, there are some available, and we've had some good crowds this weekend, really good. Yesterday, that crowd was disappointed, though, with a 14-3 loss to the Nationals. We've been talking a lot about the trade deadline, really concentrating on that. We'll see if the Cardinals make a deal as early as today, or if they wait until tomorrow, or they could wait until Tuesday afternoon, because Tuesday is the deadline. Got a text that are coming in. The first one I mentioned last segment, Seth texting in saying, temper our expectations. Don't think you need to worry. Trust me, our expectations are at a minimum. I don't know that Seth is speaking for everybody, because I do see some people that are hoping the Cardinals can strike big. But as I said, Seth, I totally expected that. And my expectations are kind of medium right now. I'd like to see them make a deal. I don't anticipate them making a huge splash. It's not like them. But if they do, great. If they did nothing, I'd be disappointed. And if they did something that didn't move the meter, that would be a letdown as well. I think they really want to do something that's going to improve the club, and not just one move, but multiple, I think, to add. And I mentioned the priorities from what I can tell. Another starter to move up to the top of the rotation would be great, but just something to stabilize the rotation would be fine. Another arm for the bullpen would be obviously welcome. And then a right-handed bat would be very nice. You know, a right-handed bat, if you could pick somebody up that's available who could make an impact and make a difference for you, that they are lacking there. And part of that is that Paul Goldschmidt has not nearly hit his MVP clip of 2 years ago, and Nolan Arenado, quite honestly, is way below what he normally does, although he's shown some signs of picking up. Wilson Contreras is a right-handed bat that obviously can make a difference, and there are some others, but they have struggled against lefty pitching, and Jordan Walker has not been a factor this year. I got a text from Bill, to Sports on a Sunday Mornings page, saying, why isn't Herrera here as that right-handed bat? And he went on to say the continual fallback plan of if Goldie and Arenado get back to what they were, well, guess what? It's the end of July. And he makes a great point. I'll answer two things. Let me go backwards. First, Goldie and Arenado have the track record that you can't just say that they're not going to do it. Eventually, one of them has the track record of taking off, and Arenado I would pick over Goldie just based on my eye test and what I've seen. But it wouldn't surprise me if Goldie went on a power binge at some point and got things going. But just his overall consistency has not been there. For whatever reason, he has not found his swing this year. Arenado is a pull hitter, you know, and if he gets into that pull-happy streak of a week where he's just yanking home runs down the line and he's blasting the ball into gaps, you know, perhaps he can find a little magic as well. But back to Herrera. The reason Herrera is not here is Pedro Pajes has taken over that second catching spot because he's a very good defender, and Herrera is not. Herrera is a good bat, but carrying three catchers and just bringing Herrera off the bench to be a bat once in a while is not great for his development. You want to have him catching all the time. The whole point is that he can learn how to be a good thrower and a good defender and a good pitch framer and a good game caller and all of those things. As he continues to work on those skills, that is going to be best for him. He, I don't think, can take playing time away from Pajes or Contreras. Now, you could say, let's carry three catchers and bring Herrera off the bench. It's a fair argument, but I think the Cardinals have decided that the best path for him, and just to answer your question as to why, is that he needs to develop as a better catcher. That's why he is doing it. That's why they're doing it with him. Not to mention, and I talked about this earlier this morning on Total Information AM, he could be dealt. You know, if somebody thinks that the Cardinals have all these great catchers, and they do, they have more coming after this. The Cardinals are like, you know, the new catching pipeline. They traded Carson Kelly. You know, they decided that they didn't even need Andrew Kisner anymore. So they let him go. The Cardinals have a very good amount of catching depth. Could Herrera be dealt? It's not out of the question. And so what's better to raise his value, to have him coming off the bench once in a while or to play every day in Memphis and show that he has the skills to be a great one for the future? Again, fair question, fair argument. I'm willing to do it. But that's the answer to Bill's question here on Sports on a Sunday morning. Let's do this. And again, Ollie Marmol was supposed to join us at 10:15. He did reach out to me and said that they had some things going on over at the ballpark down as they get ready for this game that he had to attend to, and therefore wasn't sure he'd be able to make his 10:15 hit. I told him we'd be extremely flexible, so if he's able to come on, great. If he isn't, we'll be okay. We'll move on, and we'll hear from him in our network pregame show with Mike Claiborne. We do have Lutz Fan and Steel, sporting director for City, ready to go at 11:15. We have John Mozeliak ready to go at 11:30. We have Chris Blair, General Manager, Worldwide Technology Raceway, is going to join us from Vancouver on the way at 11:45. Got a big IndyCar race coming in just 2 weeks at Worldwide Technology Raceway, so we'll talk to him about that very topic. But right now, you know what else is going on these days? The Olympics in Paris, and it is on everybody's mind. I don't know anyone right now who hasn't at least tapped in to see what's going on with the Olympics, and who better to bring on than the greatest Olympian we can think of from St. Louis, visiting with John Hancock just a short time ago. Here is Jackie Joyner-Kersee.
Something stirs in the soul when you hear the Olympic theme playing at 12:30 Central Time today. The Olympic Games in Paris, France are going to kick off, and we are pleased to be joined right now by a woman who Sports Illustrated called the greatest female athlete of the 20th century. Our own Jackie Joyner-Kersee, winner of 6 Olympic medals, 3 gold medals. She still to this day holds the world record in the heptathlon that she set over 20 years ago. She's going to be heading over to Paris sometime next week, but she's kind enough to join us today. Jackie Joyner-Kersee, welcome back to Cable X.
Thank you so much. I get chills when I hear that theme song. Yeah.
Me too. Me too. So this is, you know, you, I think, are arguably the greatest athlete that our region has ever produced. The Olympics, the Summer Olympics, come around every 4 years. You competed in them. Tell me what's going on right now in the heads of those athletes are getting ready to have the grand procession down the Seine River. What's the feeling like for an Olympian coming up to this opening ceremony?
You know, the feeling is like unreal, because now it has become in real time. So once they're doing the procession with the opening ceremony, this is really going to be happening. And so the anxiety and everything that occur afterwards, because the ceremonies, the opening ceremony is a lot of fun. But then, you know, after all that fun, now it's about competing. And so it's good that they're able to do the opening ceremony, allow some of them to relax and not think about so much of the competition. But they're in that element where the environment, where it just feeds off each other with the fans and with everyone, your family and friends around you, like, wow, we are at the Olympics and these are the Olympics and they're about to commence.
Yeah, it's got to be just an amazing feeling. And here you're competing against the greatest athletes in the world. You're the world record holder in the heptathlon. There's never been a decathlon for women track and field athletes. Men have a decathlon. Do you have a feeling? Should the women's track and field events include a decathlon?
You know what? They've been pondering with that, and I've never been a fan of it. And the reason I'm not a fan of it, because I think that when it comes to grassroots programs and being able to have equipment, the pole vault pit, or access to some of the different events that's in the decathlon, which I think you would lose a lot of young people who want to do it now. They have had, you know, different people doing the decathlon, and it's good. But for me, I just love us being able to see the best of the best dominate in the heptathlon, being able to see our young people consistently score over 6,000, then get 7,000, you know, being where you have the interest there, people wanting to pour into the heptathlon. Yes, if they go to the decathlon, it's new, the interest, the curiosity would be there, but then that becomes fleeting, you know. So in order to build interest in the multi-events, I think it's good. The men do the decathlon, the women do the heptathlon, and then, you know, they could do exhibitions. They want to do the decathlon, you know, for the women.
Yeah, so Jackie, you said you were going to head over there next week. What events are you planning on seeing in person while you're there in Paris?
I would see most of, starting with some of all the track and field events. I'm very, very keen on the heptathlon, you know, being able to see Anna Hall compete against Nafi and Belgium, who will be going for her third, trying to get a triple crown in the heptathlon, as well as Katrina from Great Britain. So it's going to be a great competition, you know, and it's just good to see. I love seeing athletes that are in the multis when they score in 66, 67. You know, if I was competing in my mind, I would be thinking that I need to score over 7,000 points if I want to win it. That's how we would be training. And so also I'd be watching the 400 hurdles with Sydney McLaughlin, who's my husband coaches her. And then, you know, in the sprints, you know, being able to see both the men 100 meter dash with Noah Laws, Fred Curley, Benacki, then, you know, with Sha'Carri Richard being able to go up against the Jamaicans, try to see if we can break that up. You know, Gabby Thomas in the 200. You know, the list could go on and on. So I'm going to be there. Tyra Davis in the long jump. Definitely going to be in tune to the events that I competed in and try to help us bring on, you know, gold, silver, or bronze.
Right. Jackie, I think track and field is by far one of my favorite events to watch. Outside of track and field, what would you say your favorite Olympic sport is to watch?
Oh, wow. Now that is... You know, I love, you know, basketball is something I did, you know, I love watching swimming as well. The gymnastics, you know, Simone Biles, you know, hey, you know, when you got the best of the best in the world, you want to go and see them. And I remember when my physical therapist, his name was Bob Forster. So when I was competing and he was into wrestling. So I would go watch the wrestling match. So I got to see John Smith compete a lot. And it was like, so I could just relax, get my mind away from what I was doing, boxing. Whatever my schedule would allow me to do, I'm going to be able to do that. So
that is Jackie Joyner-Kersee, one of the greatest athletes on the planet, and coming from St. Louis, East St. Louis specifically, great to hear her insights on the Olympics in Paris. Sports on a Sunday morning here at Cardinals Nation inside Ballpark Village, continuing now with Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol, live from his office in Busch Stadium. Ollie, thank you so much for doing this. We appreciate it.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I know that I've already seen a move that has been made this morning. You've designated Giovanni Gallegos for assignment and recalled Kyle Leahy from Memphis. That official transaction just came over. Tell us about that move, if you would.
Yeah, sorry for being late. I know we usually jump on at 10:15. The morning's been kind of crazy with a couple of different things going on, but that was one of them. And an important one, man. Gio's been really good for this organization. I know as of late, he hasn't been the same as what we saw a year or two ago, three ago. But, you look at the body of work and when we got him and in that trade, man, he's been really good for us. And he threw some meaningful innings, got some big outs, down some tough stretches, and helped us win. And whenever somebody takes the ball as much as he has and goes about their business the way Gio does, he's a pro's pro, and there's a lot of respect in that clubhouse for him. I have a ton of respect for him. Our staff loved having him around. Unfortunately, we have to make the move and get Leahy here, and it's at his expense. But nothing but respect for Gio and what he did for the Cardinal organization.
Certainly. And Kyle Leahy, you and I have talked about him. There's a quiet confidence about him that I think is very likable, not to mention how the ball comes out of his hand. He has been valuable for you so far.
Very valuable. He's a young guy that got a taste of it last year and has made some adjustments. And you can just tell he's settled in. And it's good when you have the skill set, but mentally you start to believe that you belong. And we're getting the sense that Leahy has started to believe that. And we believe in him. We've trusted him. I mean, think about it. He came up and we threw him in the eighth inning the other day, right? Like, there's a ton of trust in him being able to get outs, righty, lefty, doesn't matter. And he has the ability to give you multiple innings. So there's flexibility in that as well. So having him back on the roster is impactful.
And I appreciate well, what you said earlier, but there's, of course, no need to apologize for us. You're a busy man, and we're very grateful for the time that you give us. Just a couple of minutes left. I know that you just kind of wash away yesterday, 14-3. Things happened. It was a sixth inning that got away from you. This is related to the move today. How do you see your bullpen right now? And the second part of that would be just in general, what do you think has happened over the last couple of days? Has it just been everybody's a little off, or how do you see the Nationals able to jump on you for runs like they have?
Yeah, you look at the game, the first one, and we misplayed a ball in right that could have changed the outcome of that game, and that's going to happen, man. Our defense has been good. Our outfield play has been good. Our bullpen, when you look at how we've won a lot of games, they haven't walked people. The free passes haven't been there. And unfortunately, that's been the case the last two games. Roy Cross comes in. This is a guy that's attacked the zone a ton, specifically right-handed hitters. I mean, very low walk rate and just has gone after them. And unfortunately, he walked the 8 and 9 hole and then punches out one guy and then goes ahead and walks the Thomas in the two hole. So it's unfortunate that it worked out that way. And then Libby felt great in the pen. He said, I have no idea. I got on the mound and the ball just wasn't coming out nearly the same as it was coming out in the pen. And there wasn't a whole lot I can do about it. And gave up a lot of contact. At that point, there's no, I mean, I hear the crowd, hey, go get him. And no, we can't just keep using pitchers in a game like that, because then they're down today. So we have 16 in a row, and you have to be able to get your out when you're out there, or else you're just going to, I mean, you're not going to be able to finish games throughout the stretch. So he has to go longer than we would want, and we went from there. But, yeah, there's a combination of things. I think the walks the last couple of days have definitely led to runs, and that's uncharacteristic to how our pen has operated this entire year, and they'll get back on track. I'm fully confident in that.
Well, that's baseball for you, that some days the ball doesn't come out of the hand well, and what baseball also can provide is a new day, and it is a bright, sunny day in downtown St. Louis. You got the Nationals right up against a 1:15 start. You've come on to join us here for a little bit, and we really appreciate it. Ollie, thank you for the time very much.
You got it, man.
Have a good one. We'll see you over there. And we'll hear from Ollie in our network pregame with Mike Claiborne as well. John Mozeliak at 11:30. Big show coming in the 11 o'clock hour. Lutz Fan and Steel of City. John Mozeliak, Chris Blair, Worldwide Technology Raceway. I'm Tom Ackerman. We'll take a break. Come back right after this.
Milliken's win! Milliken's win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Our studio today is Cardinals Nation inside Ballpark Village. We just had a move that the Cardinals made internally where Giovanni Gallegos was designated for assignment and Kyle Leahy recalled from AAA Memphis. Ollie Marmol was a bit delayed in joining us at his normal 10:15 time, but he did join us at 10:45 to talk a little bit about that move. There is John Mozeliak on the schedule today. There's Lutz Fan and Steel. There's Chris Blair. Mo, I'm sure you're interested in hearing what he has to say. We'll be with us at 11:30. Are there more moves to come? We will find out back after the news, and then we will kick off the 11 o'clock hour with a rundown of what has happened here 2 days before the MLB trade deadline. We're coming to you from right outside Busch Stadium. Back after this.